I'm Marco Serafini from Yahoo Research, and this talk is not actually a talk about replication. In fact, it's a talk about handling data corruptions in distributed systems. And it's joint work with Miguel Correa while he was at Yahoo Research, Daniel Gomez Ferro, and Flavio Conquera. So the overall problem that we are addressing here is dependability in data centers. We know that crashes in these settings are very common, but more scary faults also occur. For example, there is this infamous example, this outage at the Amazon S3 service in 2008, which was an 8-hour system-wide outage, and the interesting thing, it was due to a single machine having a data corruption. So we gave this example, it's very famous, but there are many others in the literature. But this example is actually good because it has been very well analyzed, and the post-mortem analysis was very good, so that's why it's a good example. And so what happened is that a handful of messages had a single bit corrupted, and the reason was that some internal state of a process got corrupted. This particular part of the internal state was not protected through with an MD5 checksum as other part of the system state in EC2. Therefore, this information was used to produce output messages, which then propagated this error to other processes. So what happened from a more abstract viewpoint, imagine that you have a process I with two variables. Now one of the variables gets corrupted. A message comes in. When you process the message, the corrupted variable can get read, and it can propagate the error to some field of an output message. When this output message is sent to another process, the other process might read from the incorrect field and therefore corrupt its state too, and this can go on to other processes. So how do we stop this? How do we guarantee error isolation? In this paper, we propose a new approach that goes through three steps. So first, we come up with a general model of process behavior, a formal model, to be able to describe the way errors propagate inside faulty processes. The second step is defining a new fault model that is called ASC, for arbitrary state corruptions, that is able to describe the way data corruptions occur. And then the third step is to define a hardening algorithm that is able to guarantee error isolation. By error isolation, we mean that either the faulty process crashes because it detects an error, or the receiver of the message discards the message because it can see that the message is incorrect. The kind of data corruptions we look for in this paper are random data corruptions due to hardware failures. So this could be due to disks. We know that they corrupt data very often due to maybe faulty firmware. Memory modules, sometimes they don't have ECC, sometimes ECC may fail. In fact, the coverage of ECC in production is not known. And or interconnects and CPU also have, there are also cases where they created data corruptions. Existing approaches to this problem are, I will report the two ends of the spectrum. So the most common practice is to look at your code, try to understand where errors can occur, and then place checks manually. So you know your application, you know what are the invariants that that the program needs to satisfy, and therefore you come up with some checks and you add them to your code. This is very time-consuming, requires application knowledge. Not only, the worst part is that if you don't have a formal way to reason about how errors appear and propagate, that you don't have a structured principle to place checks and make sure that error isolation is guaranteed. On the other hand of the spectrum is to assume a Byzantine fault model, which is a black box model of a faulty process. So we don't try to understand how error propagates inside a process. You just assume that the faulty process as a black box will take always the worst possible steps that it could take. There are systems that guarantee hardening, so error isolation in this system, for this fault model, for example, NISIAD, which was proposed at NSTI 2008. And this approach is based on state machine replication, which comes with replication and performance costs. So you need to have multiple physical machines, you need to replicate your application. execute an agreement protocol, and then do some form of voting. So compared to the arbitrary state corruption model that we propose, Byzantine faults also encompass kind of failures that go beyond data corruptions, including, for example, attacks and bugs. But in fact, if you want to guarantee to use state machine replication in this context, you need to make sure that only a subset, less than one-third of your replicas, will be faulty. And this is very hard to guarantee when you have design faults. So you might need design diversity. But design diversity is not practical to use in most systems we know of and we are targeting. Therefore, our viewpoint in this talk is that if you have problems with attacks, you should use security techniques like access control and the like. If you want to handle bugs, you need to use verification and validation techniques. And if you want to handle data corruptions, you use hash hardening. So far, from now on, in this talk, we will focus on data corruptions and hash hardening, and we will not consider security issues and bugs. as I said before, so the first, actually the hardest part of this work was coming up with a good process and fault model that is able to describe the way error propagates inside a faulty process. The process model we defined is actually, okay, this is a fairly standard model, at least from this viewpoint. Then, of course, the actual model is more detailed than that. But from a high-level viewpoint, we consider a standard event-based process model where the process goes through three steps. Event dispatching, where an input message is received and the correct event handler is chosen. Then event handling, where the actual processing is done, the actual logic of your protocol. And event handling might access the state and modify the state. And finally, if an output message is produced, you go through message sending. So this is the process model. In terms of the fault model, we propose this ask fault model, which for those of you who are familiar with self-stabilization and work by Dijkstra, it was inspired by that, although the kind of guarantees we provide are very different. We don't try to converge to a correct state, but we want to guarantee error isolation. So the arbitrary state corruption, an arbitrary state corruption fault can either crash a process, which is the easy case, or it can assign an arbitrary value to any of the variable of the system, actually to all variable of a process, including the program counter, which means that the execution of a process may start from an arbitrary instruction. We do not assume that there is only one fault in the system. So in a run, there is only one fault, but actually over an infinite run, there could be an infinite number of faults. And the assumption we do is that every time a message is received, one fault can happen at any time during these three steps of message processing. One assumption we do to model the randomness of hardware faults is that is the fault diversity. So we admit that variables might be replicated through form, for example, using codes or full replicas. In this case, in this work, we assume full replicas, but in principle, fault diversity does not restrict to that. And we assume that if a variable is corrupted, then it will be different from its replica, because the corruption is random. So for example, if V gets corrupted, but its replica is not corrupted, they will be different, of course. But if, for example, both Z and its replica get corrupted, then they will be different. For the program counter, we cannot replicate it, so we will need different techniques to handle control flow errors. It is important to stress that we assume that fault diversity only holds immediately after a fault. It does not hold forever. So you could have a program that, for example, takes a replica and copies it into the original value, and this might invalidate fault diversity. So it could be that through some form of error propagation, or if instructions modify the original value or the replica, we don't assume that fault diversity holds any longer. So you could have cases where both variable and the replica are incorrect and have the same value. This is why what we handle with our hardening technique. In general, we don't assume that hardening protects you against error propagation. So for example, if U gets corrupted, we know that right after the fault, it will be different from its replica. But if the value of U is used to determine the value of V, we don't know whether v is equal to its replica or not, especially over multiple rounds of computation. This is something we need to care about. And in fact, with hardening, we strive to preserve this diversity. So we need, with hardening, we make sure that before sending out any message, if some variable is corrupted, either through fault corruption by a fault or through error propagation, then it will be different from its replica. How does hardening work? Well, the goal of hardening is transforming ESC faults into crashes. This must be transparent to the hardening process. This means that if you want to design a distributed system using ESC hardening, you don't need to care about arbitrary state corruptions. The hardening will take care of this for you and will transform all these state corruptions into crashes and message omissions. It is local, that's why I'm saying that this paper is actually not about replication, because all the checks we do are local to a single machine. We don't require replicating a process over multiple machines, although you can combine our technique with to implement replicated systems, of course. I mean, it applies to any distributed system. And finally, ESC hardening is untrusted. So we don't assume that there is some part of code that executes in a fault-free manner. Faults can execute at any point of the computation, including, for example, when I do checks or when I do some hardening step. So overall, from a high-level viewpoint, we will see that more in detail, but what we do is we take a process and we wrap it with a hardening runtime. So how does hardening work? Now, what I will do is to describe some failure scenarios. The correctness proof is quite intricate. We have a technical report if you want to see more about the correctness proof. I will describe you some failure cases that are enough to show why we need to do all the steps that actually cause overheads in ESC hardening, so that you get an idea of the kind of checks we do and the kind of overheads we have. So the first simplest approach to hardening is to take your process state, replicate it. Then if some variable gets corrupted, you know by fault diversity that it will be different from its replica. So when you execute, you get a message and you execute event handling, there could be error propagation and you could produce an incorrect message. But if before using a variable, when you read it, if you check it with against its replica, then you are able to crash the process. This is the simple hardening one could think of, and in fact this is implemented by some systems. More or less rigorously. However, what happens if a fault, instead of being a variable initially fault, you have a fault during the computation of the output message? In this case, the check won't help you, and you will have error propagation. Similarly, what happens if the variable is initially incorrect, but you get a fault during the check, which makes the variable look like a correct variable? Again, in this case, you will produce a faulty message, and you propagate it externally. So let's see these two cases, how we handle them. For protecting computation, as I said, we have event handling. This produces, there is a fault, it produces a faulty output message. So in this case, I said the check won't help you. So what we do is that we execute event handling redundantly on the replica state, and we produce another output message that is attached to the original message, so both the original output message and the replica output message are sent to the receiver. Of course, the replica output message could be a CRC. It doesn't have to be a full message. In this case, the receiver is able to detect a mismatch between the two messages and discard, therefore transforming a possible error propagation into a message omission. Another case is what happens. So how do we check the checkers? What happens if there is a fault while checking if a variable is correct or not? So assume in this case we have V is corrupted and the two replicas are different by fault diversity. What could happen is I do event handling, I do the check, but there is a fault during the check. So in this case I produce a faulty output message. Now even if I do redundant event handling, we don't know how the process, the logic of the process works. So even if the two variables are different, they could produce the same incorrect output message. For example, one could be 5, the other could be 7, and they could say if V greater than 3, do something wrong, right? So I could produce the same output message. We handle this case by doing the check again when we do the redundant event handling. Therefore, in this case, we are able to crash the process. Of course, doing redundant checks and redundant executions comes with a cost, because assuming that you have a process that has no fault, it's perfectly correct. Sorry, but there is no water here, so sometimes I... the process is correct, and you have the first event handling, and event handling, when you do event handling, you do the check, and V is modified. Now, what happens is, when you do the second execution, the redundant event handling, and you do the check, you will detect a mismatch between the variable and its replica, even if nothing wrong happened. So you will crash the process. Of course, you don't want to do that. So what we do with ask hardening is to add an incremental buffer. So when we do event handling, any modification that is done to the state is copied to this incremental buffer. Then we do redundant event handling. We produce the redundant output message. And then we apply. We do the check, the second check. In this case, the redundant check can complete correctly. And then we can copy the incremental changes to the state and produce the output message. Finally, so far I didn't talk about control flow errors, but of course you can also have control flow errors. They can give you many problems. For example, an event handler could execute twice, or event handling might be incomplete, or could some part of it could be skipped. We handle this using basically execution signatures. We have some variables, we call them control flow variables, which we add to the process state, and we use them to mark the fact that a certain point in the execution of the process has been reached. And this is very lightweight. And then we do checks around it. This is too long to explain here, but again, you can look at the technical report, and I will be happy to talk to you if you have questions. This hardening algorithm has been implemented as a library, which we call PASC. And some parts of the library are transparent, and some parts are user-defined in the sense. So the user can use the library to implement its own distributed system. So what we provide as a PASC library is a runtime. The user define event handlers and the process state. And the library transparently replicates the process state behind the scene. So when a message is received, it needs to be, we don't care about how communication is implemented, actually. So we just expect that input messages are delivered to the PASC runtime. The PASC runtime dispatches the message to the correct event handler. The event handler will access the process state. This is something that the user defines. And the PASC will intercept this communication and do all the necessary checks to make sure that the variables are correct and matching with its replica. Similarly, then also behind the scene, PASC will execute the event handler again on the replica state and do the necessary checks. Then when an output message is produced, PASC will give it back to the communication layer. So this is an open source project, actually. It has been recently open source. We are actively developing it. So if you're interested and you want to know more about it, you can have a look here. The reference is also in the paper. So let's go to the evaluation. The first thing that we did was implementing a ECHO server, a simple process that just receives a message and pings it back. In this plot, we have two versions of the ECHO server. One is with PASC turned on, and one is unprotected. So the implementation here is exactly the same, because the library has a flag that allows two developers to turn protection on and off. In this case, we consider empty messages. Since there is very little computation, the state is almost non-existent. So the system is network bound, and therefore PASC does not give any important overhead. What is interesting to note here is that if you look what would it cost to, if you would like to execute Byzantine tolerant hardening of this ECHO server, you would not just have to use a local library, but you would have to use some form of state machine replication. So as a reference, since the implementation of NISET is not available, we reported the performance of the PBFT state machine replication protocol by Castro and Liskov. And we see, of course, that in this case, the performance difference is huge. And also, the main difference is that PBFT requires replication and we don't. However, then we moved on and we implemented Paxos on top of PASC. And here we are more comparing, let's say, apples with apples, because we are considering different state machine replication protocols. One is unprotected Paxos that tolerates crashes and message omissions. One is PASC Paxos that tolerates ASK faults. And one is PBFT that tolerates Byzantine faults. So here what we see is that compared to PBFT in terms of peak throughput, PASC Paxos is significantly more performant. Not only that, it also requires less replicas. It only requires 2F plus 1 replicas as opposed to 3F plus 1 to tolerate F faults. And compared to the unprotected Paxos, the reduction in throughput is there, but is not very big. It's 15% around. We have also implemented a subset of the Zookeeper API on top of PASC and unprotected PASC, and we see more or less the same trends. So the overhead is not very big. So as said, we need to PASC transparently replicates the state of a process, so it has some form of memory overhead. In principle, we could rely on ECC to do memory redundancy, but we didn't want to do that, so we did full state replication in this implementation. And we see that even in this case, the memory overhead is not very big, particularly if we consider request sizes between 1K and 4K, the memory we require is, the memory overhead is similar, meaning that a large part of this memory occupation is due to objects that maybe have to be garbage collected. Finally, what we did was implementing a key value store, a very simple key value store called Simple KeyV, which is eventually consistent and requires no replication. So you have different processes, clients write to F plus one processes for persistency, and then processes exchange asynchronously written values in the background. So we do not require replicating single processes, right? And what we see is that as we increase the number of servers, the PASC hardened version of the protocol also scales almost linearly in terms of maximum throughput, just like the unprotected version. And here it is necessary to remark that if we would have used Byzantine fault-tolerant hardening with a simple KV, then we would have needed additional replicas to tolerate faults, actually, more faults, not to increase the performance of the system. Finally, of course, a very important question is this ASK model real or not? I mean, and this is, of course, very important. That's why we evaluated the fault coverage of PASC by doing random fault injections, which is the standard way to model random hardware faults in the literature. And we injected corruptions both in the code and in the state of the processes. In the code, specifically targeting both the bytecode of a process and binary code, and both pointers and primitive values for what regards the state corruptions. And what we see is that, so first, the very big, very good news is that PASC is able to protect against all these faults. So there is no, we didn't observe any form of error propagation using PASC. Another interesting aspect here is that these results, in some sense, confirm our intuition that arbitrary, so random data corruptions should be modeled as state corruptions as opposed to code corruptions. Because when we injected code corruptions, virtually all the cases where we saw some observable effect were crashes. We only saw, in the case, for example, of unprotected Paxos, we only saw 3 cases of error propagation when we injected code corruptions. And these were covered by PASC, which means probably these code corruptions actually result in state corruptions. On the other hand, if you inject state corruptions, the likelihood of having error propagation if you don't use PASC is much higher. Therefore, this in some sense confirms our design choice of focusing on state corruptions and as opposed to code corruptions. So to wrap up, In this work, we have tried to do something about the problem of hardware data corruptions without coming to having to resort to some handmade custom approach. We try to come up with a principled approach that guarantees error isolation in a formal manner. We model these hardware data corruptions as arbitrary state corruptions, which is a new fault model. We propose a hardening algorithm that guarantees error isolation and is local, so it does not require replication. And we also implemented this hardening algorithm as a library called PESC, which is very efficient and has high fault coverage. So, thank you, and if you want to know more, have more questions, please ask me, or if you want to have a look at our code, here is the repository again. Thank you.
So based on what you presented, the fault coverage, you've shown that the PASC algorithm is able to tolerate the failures that are injected, but what you have not shown is whether the PASC model makes sense or not.
And so what is that?
Is whether the PASC failure model, which you introduced previously, makes sense or not. And the reason why I mentioned this, so as far as I understood from the presentation, is that the model remains unvalidated. And the reason I mentioned this is because in the future, people may take your model and say, look, these guys have shown that this model makes sense, but you haven't really done that, right? You've just shown that your algorithm works, not the model is realistic.
Yeah. This is a good point. So it's very hard to validate the model because observing the behavior and tracing all the possible error propagations that you have inside the system is very difficult. What I think that these results say, so if you compare the column with the unprotected Paxos and PASC, you see that you have cases of error propagations if you don't use PASC, and PASC handles them. So since PASC does nothing else than covering ASK faults, in some sense it does give you an indication of the coverage of the ASK model. On the other hand, I mean, seeing, it is hard to say, it is not very well clear how would you show that the model represents these faults very well. I mean, we couldn't find a better way to do it.
I mentioned this because people who write papers will use your model, but the model is actually not validated, right? That's why I mentioned that.
I think that this is already a validation of the model. I couldn't think of better validations of the model. But we can take it offline. Maybe we can come up with some better way to validate it. But so far, we couldn't think of better ones.
Hi. Very interesting work. So there seems to be an implicit assumption that the probability of state corruption is independent between the replica and the original.
Yeah.
But as far as I understand, they run on the same physical machine, so there got to be some correlations somewhere. So I'm wondering if you see that as a practical problem, or if so, do you want to consider maybe replicate somewhere else?
Well, this is it's a good question. So again, I think the fact that PASC is able to tolerate these faults very well. So when you make a model, it's always a trade-off between the preciseness of the model, right? The precision, sorry, of the model, and the, let's say, the tractability, right? So I think that the ASK fault model is a fairly simple fault model, and maybe we cannot guarantee that it's totally precise, but these results show that it's a good model to represent the failures we had, I think. But it's true that situations like this could arise, yes.
Hi, Adel Yusuf from Microsoft. So I have a question around the code flow variables that you introduced. So apparently the amount of code flow variables is kind of linear.
No, we need only four.
So how this will work with very complex algorithms which have lots of loops, like, for example, you explore exponential state space. I'm a bit skeptical that you're able to protect
against them. Now, the event handler for us is a black box. We don't add... Okay, this is not the right slide. But anyway, the event handler is a black box. We don't assume that we are able to see inside this. So the event handler is something that the user defines, And we know nothing about that. The control flow fault checks that we do are related to the steps of the hardening algorithm.
Right.
So the problem you mentioned does not arise. We have a fixed number of control flow variables.
OK, so I only ask offline. Because
yeah, yeah, OK, we can look at the details.
Thank you.